Brian Miller is Managing Director of Navigant and former Inspector General at the General Services Administration, and looking at a protest by the Inspector General at the Department of Homeland Security, John Roth, writing about actions at the Transportation Security Administration, where TSA officials, the IG office at DHS writes, required the deletion of material in a new report from the Inspector General's office called Audit of Security Controls for DHS IT Systems at JFK International Airport. Here's the timeline that I have according to the Inspector General's office. The OIG report issued to TSA officials in draft July 22nd, 2014.
Right.
Formal challenge memo from the Inspector General to the Administrator November 19th, 2014, and then again December 19th, 2014. And then we have learned just recently, within the last week or so, about the redactions and the deletions of material.
Yes, and the way that a report typically works is the agency will get a draft report from the IG. They will have an amount of time, anywhere from 2 weeks to a month. And in this case, the IG gave TSA a month to respond with any such concerns and any concerns about the report. They didn't respond when the 30 days was up. So 30 days after the July 22nd, there was no response. Then the IG notes that the Chief of Staff at Homeland Security asked for an extension, and an extension was given. And the extension went until September 17, 2014. Then in October 20, nearly 60 days after the original due date, which is actually 90 days after they got the report, they conveyed to the Office of Inspector General that they would make sensitivity markings of several passages, and so they'd have to redact passages as SSI, sensitive security information. The pattern is one of not responding quickly, of missing deadlines by the Office of Inspector General, and they weren't tight to deadlines. They had plenty of time to respond. And then when the Inspector General has every right to dispute the classifications, when he writes a memo to the head of the agency, it's not responded to. So he then has to write a second memorandum, and then that's not responded to by the head of the agency, but by the same official that made the initial classifications.
Brian, TSA classified parts of General Roth's report as sensitive security information. We don't know if it was sensitive or not, obviously, because they classified it, and it's their report, not yours. So I don't ask you to speak specifically to the peculiarities of this report, but it strikes me this is rather uncommon. I'm not familiar with an agency changing an IG's report ever before. Is this something that's common, and under what grounds would you put up with this or not put up with this as an Inspector General?
I think it's extremely unusual for an Inspector General to issue a press release like this. And, you know, John Roth, the IG at DHS, has the greatest amount of integrity and respect by all the other members of the IG community. And so so this really shows me that there must be something desperately wrong at DHS. And you know, Francis, when I started to read his report and his memoranda to the head of TSA, you know, I saw a somewhat different story going on. The way this works is that when an agency decides to classify a portion of a report, they can classify it in any number of classifications. Sensitive security information is one of the classifications. And the ultimate authority for that designation is the head of TSA. So what happened here, even though they had done three or four reports like this in the past with no such redactions being made or SSI markings, they did on this one. And they did so 90 days after they got the report. They usually get 30 days to respond. They didn't bother to respond. The IG gave them an extension, and then 60 days after, you know, their original due date, they they make this objection. The IG writes a memo to the head of TSA objecting to the SSI classification. And you know what happens, Francis?
What happens?
Nothing. No response. Then the IG writes a second memorandum to the head of TSA, and he still doesn't respond. Instead, what happens is the person who originally classified it writes a note back to the IG saying, we don't agree with you, it's still classified. And so I think the problem is that it sends a horrible message to the employees of TSA and to DHS to totally ignore the inspector general like this. You know, at the very least, the head of the agency should have stepped in and responded to the inspector general, talked through some of their disagreements. But I think it sends a message to the employees that perhaps the work of the inspector general isn't quite as important as he thinks. And so that's the part of the story that interests me. More so than the classifications, because as you mentioned, Francis, we'll never know whether it was properly classified because we can't see the information. When I was an assistant U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of Virginia, I worked on the Misawi case, and one of the things I had to do is to go through the materials that were sealed in federal court and in the circuit court and unseal certain portions of them because we oversealed them. There were materials that were definitely sensitive, but they didn't meet the qualifications to be sealed. And the New York Times and other media outlets had filed suit to get access. And so I worked on that aspect of it, and I went through a number of these documents and unsealed a number of them. And so it's a difficult task, and it's a slow task, and getting something declassified is a long and hard process. But that's an interesting aspect to it, and other, at least on two other occasions, the issue has come up. The Boston Marathon bombing investigation was reviewed by the inspectors general for the Central Intelligence Agency, the Department of Justice, and the Department of Homeland Security. And at the very beginning of that report, the report on the Boston Marathon bombings issued on April 10, 2014, it has a note in the published report, and the note says that as to several of these classification and sensitivity designations, the offices of inspectors general disagreed with the bases asserted. We are requesting that the relevant entities reconsider those designations so that we can unredact those portions and make this information available to the public. So their report on the Boston Marathon bombing starts off with this footnote saying that they disagreed with the classifications of the certain portions of the report. The other example is from the Department of Justice. They issue top management challenges every year. And in 2013 and 2014, the Department of Justice Office of Inspector General issued the top management challenges. And in the 2014 report, it notes that our requests for declassification reviews remain pending. So they had actually asked the Department of Justice to start to review their classification determinations, and the requests are pending. And then it goes on to say that we made a similar request regarding our prior national security letter reports, and in October 2014, we released new versions of these prior national security letter reports with additional information unredacted after the information was declassified by the department and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence in response to a Freedom of Information Act, that's a FOIA lawsuit. So they made requests for declassification, but it didn't occur until after a lawsuit was filed in the Southern District of New York. So it does occur on occasion in these sensitive areas where there is intelligence. But there is usually a process, and the process usually ends up with the head of the agency with the discretion to review the classification. One of the problems IGs face in this area is getting a timely review. And the Department of Justice IG noted for 2 years in the top management challenges that he was having trouble getting the declassification reviews to begin. And so so that is a problem with IGs. From my experience as an IG, we would have difficulties with someone in a mid-level management position who didn't quite understand the role of an IG or why we needed information. And so we may not get the information, but we quickly resolve that by referring it to someone in senior management, or on occasion I would meet with the administrator and it would get resolved. In this case, the IG at DHS went to the head of the agency and the head of the agency didn't respond to him. And so, again, I come to circle back to that initial point. I find it hard to get past that and to get past all the delays that TSA made in responding to the Inspector General.
Brian Miller of Navigant's former IG at the General Services Administration, and I'm certainly not about to argue with your opinion of what's important here, but here's what really jumped out at me, Brian. Two items. Melvin Carraway is the acting administrator at TSA, has been at the agency now for more than 10 years, and began serving as deputy administrator July 2014. So this is a man who knows his way around the agency. However, we talk on this radio station at great length about the disadvantages to having acting, fill in the blank, secretary, administrator, commissioner, whatever, at an agency. Is it possible that this is a case of that, where there was something that held him back from being able to respond in a timely way? That's one thing that strikes me. Address that one, and I'll lay the other one out there, Brian.
Well, Francis, you know, it's impossible for me to know exactly what went on at TSA. And, you know, I know they have a difficult job. And, you know, nobody cares as much as I do about protecting security. I'm sure everybody cares as much as I do about protecting the security of our country. And so you do have to protect security interests. And so I don't know exactly what was going on with the people at TSA. It's difficult for me to actually answer, you know, why they didn't respond.
Let's take that then. Let's take it more generally then, Brian. Let's just say, in general, does someone occupying a role of acting leader of an agency preclude them from moving forward with something like this, or does it offer some other kind of reason why someone would not respond in the way that someone who was appointed, Senate confirmed in that job would be able to respond?
Well, obviously, Francis, and I've testified this to this on the Hill, I do think a Senate confirmed head of an agency and a Senate confirmed inspector general has more authority, and it's better on a number of fronts to have someone who is Senate confirmed and appointed by the president to do this task. I think it makes matters much easier in many ways. Now, but an acting could also act. It could also respond to the inspector general. And on a positive, let me put this positively, I think the positive way to say this is that if the head of the agency, or even acting head of the agency, expresses public support for the inspector general, that goes a long way, and that also sends a positive message to all the employees of that agency. And I know that, you know, when I issued a report and it was somewhat controversial, at least on one occasion, the administrator sent an email out supporting the report. And that goes a long way to creating a culture that supports oversight, supports the inspector general, and that would go a long way here as well. And there's, you know, even an acting head of the agency can do that as well.
The other piece of this that jumped out at me, Brian, is this. My understanding, you emphasized at the beginning of this conversation the chain of events that happened after the public release of the report and the opportunities that the agency had to respond, make amendments, whatever the correct terms are. My understanding is that there's also a review period before a report's public release where the agency would have had the same opportunities to say, at least to add an addendum or something, to say, here's information that we don't agree with, or here's information that we don't think should be provided, or at least to give them that opportunity to cover themselves if they felt that was necessary, and yet it doesn't appear they chose to take it. Am I on target there, or is my understanding incorrect?
Your understanding is precisely right, and that's what I thought I said earlier. I didn't say that, meant to say that it was public.
I see.
It was all private.
Yeah, okay.
The report was only recently made public, but it was given to the TSA, I think in July, and I'll verify that
in a minute. Yes, here's the timeline. So again, Brian, I'm not going to ask you to comment specifically on this incident, but in general, what recourse does an IG have in a situation like this where his office's work has been altered by the agency other than just simply making as much noise about it as possible and calling attention to the situation and hoping that everyone who reads it will be aware of the fact that that work has been altered in some way?
That is the primary recourse. Congress, of course, can step in as well. So that would be the only recourse an IG has if the head of the agency does not support the inspector general. And again, it's another thing if the head of the agency responded and conveyed good reasons why these passages should be redacted. But it's a totally another situation when they don't even respond. And that's the part that I think sends the bad message. And conversely, if they, on occasion, will publicly support the inspector general, that would encourage other employees to see the value of the work of the inspector general. This inspector general was appointed by President Obama and confirmed by the Senate to go in and do oversight work. And their goal is to make these programs more effective, to make the security systems at JFK more effective. They're all on the same team. And it would be very helpful if there was more public support for the inspector general, especially after kind of a negative message was being sent by ignoring the inspector general.